Welcome to Decentralize.tv. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, a free speech video platform. And we are, through this new show, this is episode 2, we are building the infrastructure of human freedom. And our special guest today is attorney Jonathan Emord, who has been known in the past, I'm not sure if he likes this nickname, but the FDA Dragon Slayer, I think is what he's been called. He is running for the United States Senate in Virginia. He's been a freedom fighter for the American people through the rule of law for many, many years. And he is accepting cryptocurrency donations in line with federal regulations for his campaign. And he supports ideas such as decentralization, liberty, and personal privacy. So my co-host today is Todd Pittner. I'll introduce Todd here in just a minute. But first, let me welcome attorney Jonathan Emord to the show. Welcome, Jonathan. Great to have you on.
Great to be with you, Mike.
Thank you for joining us. And my co-host today, as in show one, is Todd Pittner. Welcome, Todd. Hola. Great to have you on board.
Thank you. Really excited about this. Really excited to meet you, Jonathan.
Awesome to have you both here. So, all right, let's start with, now, Todd, you'll have the chance to ask Jonathan Emord lots of questions as well. And I've got a few myself, but let's start out with Jonathan. Please introduce yourself for those watching this show who may not be familiar with who you are, what you stand for. And this is a show about decentralization, not specifically about politics, but about liberty. So why are you running for the Senate, and what do you stand for that matters for us all?
Well, I'm running for the United States Senate because I believe that within the next 2 to 3 years, if we don't fundamentally change the direction of the government, that we will be seeing our constitutional republic finally transformed into a socialist dictatorship. Mm-hmm. We are witnessing the most extraordinary expansion of federal power into the lives of Americans in our history. And if this is the direction that continues, I'm afraid that freedom will be extinguished in our great country. And so that's why I'm entering this race. I don't like the swamp. I don't want to swim in it. I want to get in there and drain it. I do want to be a person who is fighting for the freedoms of our generation, next generation. We were given that sacred obligation by George Washington. He called it the sacred fire of liberty, which he said had to be rekindled with each generation. Yeah, so I'm entering this race, have entered this race precisely because I think that there is a critical need for those who understand deeply the Constitution, the regulatory state, and how to dismantle the regulatory state to get into that business and to introduce the legislation necessary to restore the Constitution's limits on government power and to recreate an environment in which freedom reigns. And we've got to get back to that.
Now, this is really outstanding to hear, Jonathan, because regardless of political leanings of you or myself or Todd, what you are talking about is of great interest right now to everybody who's involved in the world of cryptocurrency or decentralization technology. And I think for many years, a lot of those people believed that they were safe from government regulation. Not anymore, because of Gary Gensler and the SEC and the banking system and the CBDCs. So talk to us, if you would, please. And then and Todd, I'll give you a chance to chime in with your questions. But sure. Jonathan, talk to us about what are your thoughts on what looks like the SEC with the banks attempting to regulate, possibly destroy crypto, certainly to dominate it. What do you think are the goals behind this, Jonathan?
Well, I think that just as in the case of the dollar being a fiat currency, the federal government very jealously guards its role as the gatekeeper and controller of currency. And so independent currencies, that is private currencies and private means by which to transfer, exchange, purchase, and invest, frighten the dickens out of them, because the cryptocurrency marketplace is going to mushroom and people are going to be independently acting without the SEC in large measure and without also the banks. And so that poses a threat to the powers that be, and it's expressing itself by a rather hurried effort on the part of regulators to see if they can find some way to restrain and limit the growth of this industry and to substitute for it a federal fiat currency, a federal fiat digital currency. And that would be, of course, ruinous, because one of the greatest things that we have for our expression of freedom is cryptocurrency. It is a magnificent opportunity not only to liberate people from federal restraints, but also to ensure for the first time in world history a global private currency that each person can function like a bank, each person can make their own investing decisions without having to interact with government.
That's you state it so clearly. And Todd, your turn to chime in, but I just want to bring your attention to the fact that Jonathan Emord, I love his words. Jonathan, you're a poet. Like every time you speak, it's so eloquent and so such clarity about the issues. Todd, what are you thinking as you hear Jonathan?
Heard that, I'm sitting here thinking, I have been covering private money, private cryptocurrency for 2.5 years. And what he just articulated, I just wish, I'm going to go back and I'm just going to handwrite notes and transcribe it, because it was like, I couldn't say it any better. And I've been at it for 2.5 years. That was beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to just ask him a macro question that, and then I'd like to be able to get into CBDCs and ask you some questions there, but, the macro one, because I don't run in the circles where I know somebody running for Senate. My question is this: to me, as just a 50-year-old dude, it seems to me like government today is so corrupt that elected officials, or those who we think are elected, it seems like they're selected, not elected. Because the thumbs on the scale are from very, very wealthy people who kind of, I think, control the media and the narrative. So you are in for an uphill battle, and I admire you for taking this on. And I want to be able to support you personally with private crypto. But please tell me, are government officials, in your point of view, selected or elected, honestly?
Well, we have a intense competition between those who are supported by grassroots efforts, and as well as individuals who are well-heeled, and an institutionalized corporatist state that operates in America. You've got a whole industry, largely on K Street, Washington, D.C., where you have lobbyists who are there for big business, and they lobby the Congress, and they lobby the regulatory agencies to get regulations and laws in place that create barriers to market entry and protect the vested interests of these institutions. You have those on the one hand, and then on the other hand, you have, in the case of Soros, sort of a one-man band who is massively wealthy and believes that his fundamental objective should be the total destruction of the United States, and he's the principal financial backer of the Democrat Party today and of leading candidates. So you're quite right. There are nefarious influences that work against the Constitution and the rule of law that do fundamentally affect us and alter our destiny. But it's calling those things out, being direct about it, and being independent and strong, and fighting for the Constitution that is not just an option for us who believe in freedom, it's a necessity. So if we're going to save our country, we've got to fight this, and we have to be honest about it and recognize that indeed the regulatory state is a victim of capture by big business and is serving the interests of those who have the resources in big business and is acting against our interests. And one great example of that is the Federal Food and Drug Administration, which for years has approved unsafe drugs over the objection of medical reviewers in the agency, and has protected drug companies even when those drugs have caused massive injury in the public. So it's, and we just went through this episode in spades with COVID and the COVID vaccine, and we still are suffering from it. So yes, there's a lot to be said that what you're hitting on is real, and it's profound, and is very, very damaging, and has been eroding away at our constitutional rights and protections for many, many years.
Jonathan, I want to give out your website. It's emord, EMORD, for VA, as in Virginia. So Emord, F-O-R-V-A .com. And that's where people can find out more about your candidacy. And although it's not on here at the day that we're filming this, I understand from some of your campaign people that you're going to be accepting cryptocurrency as campaign donations. Now, that's something that others have also announced, such as RFK Jr. and so on. Can you just talk to us a little bit about that decision to accept crypto, why you think that's important?
Well, I think that we have to support cryptocurrency. We have to support individual freedom over your own money and separation of government from the business of basically controlling, directing, and determining how we invest through influences such as, you know, interest rates and through their control through the Federal Reserve over the future of the dollar and the relative availability of that source of money. So my decision to have the campaign do it is very simple. I believe in it. And as a consequence, I wanted to be able to accept it. And I had put this ball in motion earlier and we're perfecting it for your program so that people can make donations to our campaign. But you can count on me as one who in the United States Senate will vigorously defend the right to have this form of private currency and to keep government out of the way.
Wow. Well, there's the quote for the whole show right there. Yeah. That you as a U.S. Senator. Yeah, I want to hear your thoughts, Todd. But if Jonathan Emord becomes the next senator from Virginia, then he will vigorously defend your right to private cryptocurrency. What do you think about that, Todd?
I think that is music to my ears. Jonathan, I lived in Richmond, Virginia for years, and I live in Tampa now. And I now kind of want to move back to Richmond so that I can vote for you. In my crypto studies over the last 2.5 years, we went through a series called The Quest for Superior Money. And we compared a couple of digital assets, crypto assets to gold, to Federal Reserve notes, and to CBDCs. And through that process of taking a look at all of the attributes of superior money, if you could just start from scratch and build it, it was really interesting to me to compare private crypto to CBDCs. Would you agree with me, Jonathan? I believe when you think about what is surveillance disguised as money? And I think the answer is CBDCs. Would you agree?
I would. One of the greatest fears I have is that government gets into the business of making the currency a fiat digital currency and having total control and a bird's eye view into every interaction we have. So once the government controls that space, you end up with a situation where there is no privacy at all.
Yeah.
And every action you take, every interaction you take, will be able to be tracked. And and moreover, as we know from the ESG emphasis, there's already afoot a movement to basically punish anyone who has conservative views or libertarian views by denying them access to their own currency, their own resources, and furthermore by denying them access to loans and to opportunities for business transactions. And structuring their businesses, actually, and to even controlling shareholders' investments. So this is a gross distortion of the market and a massive threat to individual liberty, freedom of choice. So we've got to act against it. We cannot have the government in the business of controlling the currency.
You've really nailed something important here, Jonathan, and I want to thank you for bringing it up in this way. But most of us have grown up in a world where we were allowed to spend our money in almost any way that we chose, where money wasn't a surveillance system. Even though banking records could be subpoenaed, it was only typically by a judge's order, you know, a search warrant, something like that. But now we have slowly transitioned under authoritarianism to a system where the powers that be are seeking to roll out a central bank digital currency that constantly surveils and limits your ability to use money for example, to make it to have limits on food purchases or specifically meat purchases, right, for, you know, climate reasons or whatever justification they want to give us. They could say you can't purchase gasoline because it's a fossil fuel. They could say you've purchased too much food, or you can't purchase a firearm, for example. This is where it's going, and it's like we're sleepwalking into this. Isn't this a very dangerous move into tyranny?
It sure is. It's like an old dystopian movie where you had, you know, Orwellian kind of features. And it indeed is that thing. I mean, we this brave new world, to use Aldous Huxley's terminology, is upon us. And we've seen it even before digital currency. I mean, we've seen it arise with the government's emphasis on banks asking us questions about the intended use of our resources before they allow us access to funds above a certain dollar amount. That's going on right now. And it's part and parcel of this bigger movement. This ESG movement is really well on its way. So, of course, one of the greatest threats is when the government controls the digital currency as it wishes to and becomes the super surveillance state and a super controller, that it will be able to direct our actions such that it will punish us if we act against the interests of those in power. So you have a situation where individuals who want to develop fossil fuels or are engaged in business with fossil fuels want to have international relations with those companies that may develop things with fossil fuels may find themselves with State Department and FBI and DOJ and regulatory agencies across the board influencing the pressures that are placed upon them to not do it, such as denying you access to your own money or to limiting your access to loans. This is a totalitarianism. This is beyond socialism. I mean, this is Marxism writ large, where you have totalitarianism. We see this happening now in China, this very model, and they're trying desperately to introduce it here.
Yes. Todd, go ahead. You want to chime in there?
Yeah, I just wanted to, for the audience, I always try to rewind a little bit and be able to educate folks who may not really understand what is a CBDC, central bank digital currency. First and foremost, it is a four-letter word. And let me share with you just some attributes of a CBDC so that it hits home. First of all, it's an unlimited supply. So when you talk about your purchasing power, it is going to be very susceptible to inflation. It is centralized. So you have, it's basically ruled by rulers. And that's always very dangerous, especially when there are brown paper bags at the highest levels at stake. It's an opaque monetary policy.
What are the brown paper bags? What are you referring to? What is that?
Oh, it just might be somebody that might say, hey, you know, can you program that money? Because CBDCs are programmable money. Can you program it to where Jonathan, he has to limit his carbon footprint, so he's only allowed 2 steaks per month. And so after the first 2 steaks he bought the first week for he and his wife, you know, the fourth week, yeah, that transaction's going to be restricted. It's not going to be able to go through. Well, those people who have greater agendas, you know, they receive little brown paper bags from
the powers that be. Payoffs.
Yeah.
Okay. I couldn't quite track that reference. I was thinking of people putting bags over their heads for some reason. But maybe that's more appropriate.
That was COVID. But anyway, also CBDCs are closed. They're permissioned. You have to have permission for it. And there's always risk of seizure. We all know about bail-ins, right? But they'll program the money to where if they give you this helicopter money, ultimately, you have to be able to spend it by the end of the month or within 2 months, or it's spend it or lose it. And it is so privacy invasive. That's another attribute. And above all else, it just enables censorship. So that's what you get.
Yeah, let's ask Jonathan to respond to that. So yeah, surveillance, programmable money, a level of control and tyranny that none of us have ever lived under before.
Quite right. I mean, what we have with this is the digital revolution enables us to have such a thing as an NSA state, which we presently have, enabling the government through algorithms to monitor communications from people through digital means across the internet and across telecommunications technology. We see that with the reach of the NSA into private correspondence and communication, allegedly for the purpose of fulfilling their duties under the Patriot Act and under national security directives from the White House. But of course, it has been very dangerous. It has violated the civil liberties of American people without a establishment of probable cause that a crime has been committed. This then is a magnification of that, to the extent that every single transaction you make would be monitored and be able to be categorized as either consistent with various national objectives and policies and laws, or inconsistent with it, raising a red flag, at which point it would instantaneously trigger responses such as pressure to limit the amount of available credit, or conversely would open up the channels of credit and give you benefits and opportunities. So this is a police state over your dollar, over your resources, over your finances, in a way that we have never seen in the history of our country. And it's really economic tyranny. That's what it is.
Yeah, well said, economic tyranny. When we're seeing the early signs of that right now with ESG scoring of corporations, and we saw recently how tobacco companies were able to achieve a very high ESG score, while oil companies are not. And so there's a rating system that affects the cost of acquiring credit, bank loans, or the cost of those loans, or even hiring people and so on. But Jonathan, as we move into this attempt to place this onto people, I've got to ask you, because I think you're a good gauge of human behavior. You've dealt with a lot of court cases. You've argued a lot of issues. You've won on a lot of issues. You understand economics and so on. Do you think that the people will just accept a central bank digital currency system, a government digital wallet, probably tied to a universal basic income? Like, here's free money as long as you use our system. How successful or do you think it will fail? Or how successful do you think that system would even be once they attempt to roll it out?
I think they will roll it out in a manner that really Louis Brandeis spoke to, even though I don't agree with Louis Brandeis on most things. I do appreciate a quote he has, which is, "Beware of insidious encroachment by men of zeal, well-intended but without understanding." And that's the insidious encroachment is what's likely to happen. In other words, we already see it happening, where you have difficulty getting money without having to explain what it's for to a bank that then has to report to the federal government information about you on all of your transactions over $10,000 and so on. And that whole approach, I think people have slowly become accustomed to. There's no rioting in the streets over it, for example. So if the government proceeds in this way, incrementally, and does so based on one platitude or another, we must do this in order to protect the environment. We must do this in order to ensure that you are not inadvertently contributing to an enterprise that we consider criminal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They may be able to achieve a good part of this simply by duping people into it. What I'm hoping happens is that people like me can raise the alarm loud enough, if I get that Senate platform, be able to alert people that this is not something they've ever seen before, and in fact, greatly invades their privacy and can readily be manipulated by those in power for their advantage and to the disadvantage of other individuals. I mean, it is conceivable that all types of actions of people, whether it's related to voting or protesting actions, all of this could be hampered or hamstrung to such a great extent. I mean, imagine not being able to get into a cab or in a train or on an airplane simply because of your political views, or because your expenditures suggest that you are supporting causes or individuals that the government objects to. I mean, this is the kind of heavy-handed totalitarianism that this enables. We must never allow a federal fiat digital currency. Mm-mm. Cannot allow that. We want private digital currency. We want it to flourish because that is an expression of individual freedom and liberty, and it's consistent with our Constitution and protection of economic liberty. But if we and political liberty, but if we do not stop this movement to both suppress the private rise of digital currency and to enhance and overwhelm it with a public digital currency that's controlled by the government, we are going to witness the loss of freedom happen. And I think the risk of it, I think that the players on the other side recognize that if they push it entirely into place rapidly, they will cause a major popular reaction. So I suspect they'll do it sector by sector, and they'll do it with a public interest veneer that they put upon it that they think will cause the population to basically go along like sheep in the presence of wolves, just unaware of their presence, wolves in sheep's cloth.
Wow.
Jonathan, yeah, I'm known as Todradamus, and I have a vision right now, and that is that there might be something called a pandemic or plandemic or something to where cash is the carrier of a boogie virus. And I can imagine that there could be such a scare out there to where everybody is just brainwashed by mainstream television to where that cash can kill you. It'll kill grandma, you know? And I don't know about you, but I kind of witnessed it starting in 2020 that a lot of people started wearing, you know, face coverings. And so my imagination can actually go there to where people would be so afraid of their cash, but good news, they can take their cash into the bank and you have $1,000 of cash. Not only are you going to get $1,000 of digital currencies, but there's going to be the bonus of you doing that. You'll actually get $1,100 worth. And then all of a sudden, it's just step by step, incrementally, cash starts to disappear. And once that happens, and it's just those initial steps, right, to be able to get this mass adoption of these CBDCs, that's kind of how I think they may go about getting it, because they already went through the dry run of how they can strike fear into every person out there.
Fear is one of the most effective means by which government can induce people to give up their rights without a fight. If you terrify people, they will readily follow you. If you tell them, if you actually cause them to believe that something beyond their control may fundamentally alter their existence, may cause them to lose their life or will cause them to be constricted dramatically in their ability to move about, they will listen to you if they believe what you say and you present it in a credible manner, even if it's false. And many will be induced to give up their freedom, to do exactly what you want them to do. And of course, that's what we saw during COVID with the masking you're talking about, with this hysteria that first it was 60% had to be vaccinated, then it was 80%, then it's everyone in the country, everyone and their dog. Basically, if you had any living thing in your family that was human, it had to be vaccinated no matter how young. And this was horrendous, yes. Due to all sorts of horrors. But the biggest thing that it did in long term was condition the American people to give up their liberty in the presence of a crisis. So as soon as they start ringing the bell of an emergency and of circumstances beyond your control, they tried this with climate change, and they've consistently worked on that to try to induce people to believe that the world is coming to an end, when historically we've had these calls since the 60s. And they've proven themselves not just wrong, but dead wrong. And we've, you know, we're here and the environment's doing fabulously. And so while there are environmental threats, indeed, there is not a fundamental change in the universe such that tomorrow we'll all be dead. And if you look at their predictions, we should have been dead 2 decades or 3 decades ago, 4 decades ago. We should have been dead last year, and we should be dead now. But miraculously, we're not. But they scared the living daylights out of a number of people. who have done such things as get rid of automobiles. They won't drive on them. They live in a little hermit somewhere hut, and they eat little shavings of one kind or another that they can find in out of roots of their in their backyard. I mean, this is what you do to people. You cause them to be petrified so that they'll give up modern conveniences. They will not use a stove. They will not use air conditioning. They will be frozen in the winter and burn up in the summer, and think that that's all well and good because, you know, humans have to be punished in order to save nature.
Let's I've got a burning question for you on this, but thank you for explaining that, Jonathan. I think you're right on. But the power to create money or to print fiat currency, which frankly technically isn't exactly money, but let's say the power to print money is the power to control or the power to destroy. And under a central bank digital currency system, the government itself, or perhaps with the central bank, would have unlimited power to create unlimited digital currency. Now, contrast that, if you would, please, against peer-to-peer cryptocurrency, which has strictly limited supplies that are algorithmically limited, such as Bitcoin's 21 million and other coins that have very limited emissions for each block that is confirmed. I think Monero works that way. And more importantly, no government in the world can sort of invade the Bitcoin blockchain and just create 20 million more Bitcoins, right? But they can do that with digital currency that they control. What are the implications of the fact that government can create this digital currency versus in peer-to-peer systems where you cannot just counterfeit it?
So with digital currency, you have this enormous rapidity with transactions and with the ability to create more money if it's the government in control of it. So the government can overnight create Venezuela kind of inflation simply by electing to increase the supply and vastly do that to the extent that it devalues the relative worth of a fiat currency. And they can choose to do this for one reason or another. It controls people. It certainly puts burdens on the backs of working class people and middle income people, and can oftentimes inflate the value and wealth of others, depending on their investments. So we've always seen this with the Federal Reserve in controlling money. But notice the difference here. The Federal Reserve, when it causes money to be printed, or when it causes money to be restricted by controlling the money supply with increasing interest rates, that whole thing playing with the money supply has a time period where it lags to a degree. If you have a fiat digital currency with the government, then their decisions about these things will have instantaneous impact. It will be virtually instantaneous. It'll happen overnight, and people will suddenly see, if they're inflating the currency, the price of all goods and services to rise very dramatically and quickly. So that contrasted with private currency, of course, when people are in control of their own money, they exercise that wealth and the wealth generation associated with it with prudence to ensure that not only that they are able to finance and pay for the things that they want, but the recipient of it too is under a degree of control, because to the extent that his pricing deviates from what the market rate is in relative competition, he's going to face a swift rebuke by having the purchaser go to someone else. And this becomes also more rapid in a digital environment. But unlike the government, which bases its decision about the relative availability and use of supply of cash in the market based on political decisions that benefit necessarily one class against another, or one group of people against another, the purity of the private system is that it goes all the way back to Adam Smith and the Wealth of Nations, that it's not through the benevolence of the butcher or the baker that you receive your meat and bread, but by his pursuit of his own self-interest. And so you do get good quality bread and you do get good quality meat precisely because that's what you want as a consumer. And if he shorts you or cheats you, you will not go back to that seller. In the case of the government, the shorting and the cheating can go on for political reasons and you have no control over it. You simply can't stop it. So there's a great deal of much more. There's certainly fraud, of course, and that's prosecutable by the government, regardless of what type of currency we use. But in the ordinary course, Americans and people from around the world who want to engage in transactions will do so based on a perception of their own respective self-interest. And that in and of itself has a control aspect that is not affected by random political determinations that affect the entire marketplace. So that's the huge difference. And we've witnessed private currencies, even to this day in the United States, but all throughout our history, where private currencies have really worked far better in eliminating problems for people than when the government gets involved. The notion of runaway inflation is a byproduct of government production of cash or of resources without limit for a political end. So, you know, that's what we saw the downfall of Britain during the colonial era in no small measure because of war spending. They spent to a profligate extent and they destroyed their currency. They created inflation. And we see the same thing with Venezuela now. We see the same thing really all over the world. In the colonial era, we had unchecked printing of currency, which was by government.
What about the printing going on right now in the U.S.? I mean, we're over $32 trillion in debt, and the printing, it was high under Obama. It went even higher under Trump, and now it's crazy high, like insanely high under Biden. Doesn't this end?
Yes. Well, this ends in disaster. You're not only forfeiting the forfeiting the opportunities for future generations. When you have $32 trillion plus in debt like we have right now, it is indeed totally unsustainable. And it expresses itself in greater and greater levels of inflation and greater insecurity and devaluation of the dollar. Increasingly, then we become a party that is so much in debt and has to spend so much money to finance that debt that the rest of the world loses faith in relying on the United States or to have us have the reserve currency for the world. The effect of losing the reserve currency is one that will impoverish every American and will make it far more difficult for us to live. So we live as a superpower only because we are the reserve currency for the world, because the world views us as a source of stability and assurance.
Or they did previously, anyway.
Yeah, right now, we already see the movement afoot to replace the dollar with the Chinese currency in Africa and in Europe and in Southeast Asia, really the whole world. So we have to stop that. And the best way to do it is to return to sound fiscal policy, to dramatically cut government spending, to reduce taxation too, ironically, but to reduce taxation both for individuals and corporations to grow the economic pie. We learned that lesson from Kennedy and his tax cuts, from Ronald Reagan and his tax cuts, that actually when you take a nation that's heavily taxed and regulated like we are, and you substantially reduce taxation and regulation, you create an economic boom, and that can lead to private sector determinations that grow the economy magnificently. We are ingenious when unregulated to develop such things as, you know, computer technology and so on that can actually enable us to make wealth, grow the pie. Biden treats the economy as if it is a fixed sum game that you aren't going to be able to grow the pie. He's viewing our country as having its best days in the past, not in the future. And so he's actually preparing us to collapse. The whole idea of taking the fossil fuel backbone of the American economy and crushing it is suicidal. But he proceeds along that course because apparently he's reconciled to the notion that we will or are going to become a third world country. Of course, that's not guaranteed to happen and will not happen if we pursue an alternative agenda, which invites freedom and expands as much as possible the private sector and diminishes as much as possible the public.
All right, Todd, you get the last question for our guest today, Jonathan Eamord, and then we'll have a discussion after that. But go ahead, Todd.
Yeah, bottom line, I think we need to stop using the network's money if we can, anytime we can. But I just have really more of a request, Jonathan, which is if we could get your campaign manager's contact info and the suggestion box. I would like to suggest that you pivot from running for Senate and run for president. I have loved every word that you've said. I'm just sitting here thinking, I don't want to be rude, but I should have taken out my notebook and started just taking notes and becoming a student. I love you, man. I love you, man. You are going to be so good for Virginia. And Mike, I know I speak for you as well, but we'll do anything we can to support you.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really humbled by what you had to say. And I just know that all of us who love freedom realize that this is the 11th hour. And we have to take a stand. We have to fight, because if we don't, we're going to lose everything. And I believe that the greatest days for our country are ahead of us, but this is the pivotal moment. And we have to really ensure that our country returns to its constitutional moorings and that we allow the private sector to flourish. If we do, China becomes no longer a major issue. If we have the resources, because of our freedom, and we stand up for that and make us again a bastion of liberty, the last best hope for freedom on earth, as Abraham Lincoln put it, we will prevail. We will overcome every obstacle to freedom and progress. But we cannot allow this mindset that's leading, we talked about today in spades, that's leading to totalitarianism. We've got to stop it. And it has to be stopped now, because the threat is here. And it's now, and it's expansively in our face. I mean, it really is happening. So,
well, it's people like you, Jonathan, in the United States Senate who can be game changers. A lot of these decisions come down to one or two votes in the Senate. So the website, folks, is emordforva.com, emordforva.com. And there will be crypto donation options available at the donate button here shortly, perhaps by the time you see this. There are requirements, by the way, set by the federal government for when you donate anything, like you have to give your name and so on. So there are no, you know, large-scale private donations directly to candidates. That's just part of the election rules. But I want to mention too, Jonathan, that you're going to be a guest coming up on my show, my regular show, Brighteon Broadcast News, later in July. We've got a special event planned. I'll keep people in the loop about that. But I want to thank you for your time today, Jonathan, and give you the opportunity for any final thoughts. You want to wrap this up for us today? What your campaign stands for in terms of money and privacy and currency?
Well, freedom of choice, individual choice, and the right to retain what is your own. You know, Thomas Jefferson put it best, and this is something we can all live by. He defined the sum of good government. He said, "A wise and frugal government shall restrain men from injuring one another, shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned." And he described that as the sum of good government. It was the sum of good government then when he said it, and it remains the sum of good government today. We must get back to those foundational principles. If we do, we will prosper and we will be free. And that's what we need to give not only to ourselves, but also to every generation of Americans to come.
Well, well said. I mean, expertly said. So, folks, it's Jonathan Emord for Senate. If you are in Virginia, be prepared to vote for Jonathan Emord. And you can also donate to his campaign from anywhere in the country as an American. You have the right to do that. And what are the individual donation limits? Is it like 3,000 something?
For a couple, for both the primary and the general, I think it's $13,300. It's half that for one primary or the general. And it is also, that's for a couple, and it's a half of that, I believe, for an individual.
Okay.
So anyhow, the limits are there. You'll see them on emordforva.com. But yes, if people can donate digital currency, that would be great. Bitcoin's tremendous. And I think we need to establish ourselves with this program as a champion for receipt of that kind of resource in favor of a campaign for liberty. I think if you believe in your digital currency and your rights to freedom associated with it, it's important to donate to this cause, because this is the cause that will defend your rights. So thank you so much, Mike, for having me on. I've appreciated the opportunity to talk about this important issue.
Thank you, Jonathan. We greatly appreciate you. We'll let you go now, and Todd and I are going to continue. We'll talk about you after you leave, but we'll say nice things. So
very kind.
We appreciate you. Have a
it's
great
been a pleasure.
Rest of the day. Okay.
Cheers.
Take care, Jonathan. So Todd, wow. I mean, is that man amazing or what?
My gosh. I'm just humbled. I'm like, okay, let me see. How can I take this 10 word question and make it just 3 words so he can talk longer?
Yeah. I know he's so eloquent and he really understands the issues, but in a bigger picture perspective, and you know, you and I can spend a few minutes on discussion now, but how exciting is it that for this campaign cycle right now, we have so many candidates for the first time talking about cryptocurrency? And now, you know, RFK Jr. talked about Bitcoin. He spoke at the Bitcoin conference.
Right. Yeah.
But Jonathan Eamord talks about private digital currency.
Private money.
Right? Yeah. So that's like another level of understanding the issues.
Yes. 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 No, that was such a pleasure. And right now I'm just sitting here waiting for, what did you say? Sometime in July, you're going to have him back on your show. I can't wait to watch that.
Yeah, I mean, actually, yeah, we have a kind of a live streaming event planned with Jonathan in July. I don't know the exact date yet, but we're going to make that happen. I'm just doing that to help him gain publicity. You know, it's kind of, we want to use our technology to help restore human liberty and freedom. And there's no better champion than Jonathan Eamord.
And like I shared, I lived in Richmond, Virginia for 4 years, and I still have a lot of friends there. And I am going to hit all of them up and say, and send them a link to this video and say, you have to watch this man. You have to listen to him speak, and you have to vote for him. You have to support him. I don't care which side of the aisle you're on. If you didn't listen to him and weren't inspired, I don't think you can fog a mirror.
Well, and let me bring up a practical matter too that comes to mind in all of this. The reason privacy-oriented digital currency matters for these kinds of donations and elections is, you know, the more that you understand that election donations might be surveilled or tracked, or that the regime in power may not like it if you donate to certain candidates, this is why you don't want to use Bitcoin, for example, because that donation, you know, once the receive address of a Bitcoin wallet for Jonathan Eamord is known, then the government can surveil everybody who donated to that wallet.
Mike, talk about the Canadian truckers.
It's the same scenario, right? So people wanted to donate to the Canadian truckers, that the peaceful protests during COVID, and you know, Justin Trudeau and the Canadian government said, oh, we're going to freeze your bank accounts because you donated $50. And they did. They froze people's bank accounts. And they also tried to block certain Bitcoin wallets. And they actually put out an announcement to the crypto exchanges to not honor transactions from these specific Bitcoin wallets. Now,
and that's, again, I kind of go back to analogies. For me, it's, if you donate in Bitcoin, it's like you using the restroom with a clear door on it. I mean, you're surveilled. People are going to know that you're going to, that they will know that you donated to a certain person. And if you have the power the powers to be that are centralized and want you to have permission to be able to donate anything, otherwise, you know, they may seize your assets and invade your privacy and censor you. What we were talking about here are the CBDCs, and in a weird kind of way, in the world of cryptocurrency, when it comes to donations to political causes, it's caveat emptor, buyer beware. You need to make sure that you figure out how to be able to get into private crypto so that you protect yourself, so that you don't have somebody. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, and this is critical to understand is that, and again, I know experts in this field already know all this, but bear with me because we have a lot of relatively new viewers and users. But on a Bitcoin blockchain, a copy of the ledger is stored on every node, and it's very transparent. Anybody can look at the blockchain and they can analyze your wallet ID has been used to receive money from who or to send money to who. And they can link it back through multiple steps and they can see everything about you. It's like being naked. Whereas privacy crypto, such as Monero or others, and we're going to be interviewing a lot of people from different projects, privacy crypto does not reveal your wallet ID, especially the Mimblewimble blockchain does not reveal the wallet ID at all. In Monero, your ID is hidden among other transactions, so nobody can tell it's you in particular. And there are different ways that different projects address this, but no one can then trace your wallet and see what you did before or who you donated to. So if you're going to donate to a candidate that the government doesn't like,
right?
And this could be America, it could be Canada, it could be Iran, Venezuela, you know, North Korea, you name it. If you're going to donate to a candidate the government doesn't like, it might make you a target of the regime. That happens all the time. Cuba, Venezuela, whatever, China. You need to make sure that you donate in privacy crypto so that it cannot be linked back to you, period. Whereas if you use a credit card or a check, it can always be linked back to you.
That's right.
Right? Now, yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to segue into something else.
Okay, no, but you can chime in. But, you know, every episode here we demonstrate a skill.
Right.
For people. So I do want to get to that. Today's skill is going to be using a swap system.
Okay.
A simple swap in this case is actually called simple swap. Again, they're not a sponsor. You know, we always disclose if anybody is. Simpleswap.io is the website that I'm showing here. And it allows you to swap Bitcoin for other coins. So in this case, you can swap Bitcoin for Monero, but you can pick your own coin. I mean, it's got Zcash and Ethereum and probably hundreds of others. I've never even heard of most of these. But you can swap for all kinds of coin. And also Change Now is another swap, right?
Yep.
And
yep.
Changely and what are some of the others out there?
There's Godex.io, which I like a lot.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of swap services. And what you do is you send them Bitcoin, and then in semi-real time, they send you back the coin that you want, and there's an exchange rate. And these different exchanges, they compete on the efficiency of their exchange to give you, you know, more coins, while still they get a little bit of profit from the exchange. And it you know, depends on the coin you're getting and the volume and so on. But if people are wondering, like, how do I get a privacy coin? It's simple. First, you buy Bitcoin. Right. You can get Bitcoin on any KYC exchange. You know, you can go to KuCoin or Coinbase or Gemini or Binance or wherever, and you buy some Bitcoin, and then you use a service like this. I mean, this is the simplest way, simpleswap.io, and you can trade Bitcoin for Monero in this case, or other privacy coins. Now, once it's in, I'm going to use Monero as the example because it's the the highest volume. But no, Monero is not a sponsor of the show. the sponsor is actually the Satellite Phone Store. We'll talk about them in a second. But
perfect.
You get Monero, and now that goes into your Monero wallet. The chain of traceability is now broken. Like, no one can track your Monero any longer because Monero is a private coin, just like the project that you worked with, Epic, or Fero or other private coin projects, that chain is broken from that point forward. You are now non-surveillable. Make sense?
Yep.
So I just want to show that, Todd. Go ahead.
And I just want to kind of rewind and let people know, if you don't think surveillance is important to the powers that be within Bitcoin, Bitcoin is a $500 billion asset. So Blockstream, which is the company out there that they make their living surveilling transactions, they are a $20 billion company. So imagine that, $20 billion in revenues just to be able to surveil your spending and the blockchain. So it's a big deal. You wouldn't, and guess who's receiving, guess who's paying for that? three-letter agencies, banks, etc.
Yep.
So that's why breaking that chain of custody into privacy is really going to be a muscle that you must exercise in the future.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But one of the key points that, you know, our guest Jonathan Emord brought up is that if we don't, I mean, we're going to have to choose a system. And the choice is either going to be a central bank digital currency system, right? I mean, all money, well, not all, but most money is going to go digital because of the ease of use and so on. But you're either going to have to choose government money, which is a surveillance system, or you're going to choose private money. Mm-hmm. Private money, which is peer-to-peer decentralized cryptocurrency, or perhaps, you know, you could trade gold and silver with people locally, which is fine as well. Or you could, you know, you could mail gold to somebody and get something in return, but it's cumbersome. But and it's risky. What if it disappears? The U.S. Postal Service isn't that great about a lot of things. You send cryptocurrency to somebody, especially on the Mimblewimble blockchain, for example, you know it's going to get there. It's not going to be lost in between. And it's secure, reliable, trustless. You don't need to trust anybody to make it to do it. But isn't it true, Todd, that we each and every one of us is going to have to choose what kind of money system we want to operate in? And one system sucks, and that's the government system.
Yeah. Yeah. I think being a pragmatist, that it's going to be both and. I don't think it's ever going to be the case to where we're going to be able to escape the network's money entirely, just because of convenience.
When you say the network, what are you meaning?
I'm talking about the Druid Babylonian bastard bankster network.
Okay, the banking cartels. Okay,
the banking cartels network, the Fed. You know, just the ones who control the money now, and the ones who are pushing the CBDCs, and all roads seem to go back to, you know, a one world government, you know, the World Economic Forum, just all the tentacles that are out there that are looking to control digital money. I believe we are going to, just by default, we're going to, you know, I don't know what percentage of our net worth we're going to have to engage in there, probably not a ton, but we have to build utility for private money. There is power in private money right now. And it is this show that we're hoping to be able to educate you on, not just the how, but the why you need to get in there. And I think our guest today, Mike, just clearly described it. I mean, I cannot wait to listen to this again with my student notebook out and take some notes. I love him.
No, I'm assigning this video to my editors to write this up, because what Jonathan Emord said was so eloquent. A couple of programming notes. So folks, first of all, the website for this show is decentralized.tv. And there you can find all the show episodes posted. Plus you can sign up for our email announcement list. And the reason that matters is because we will send you an email as each new episode goes live, so you can be the first to see it, and you'll be among the first to know who's our guest and who we're talking to or what project we're talking about. And you know, it's to your convenience to get that email as soon as it goes live. So that's one thing. And then we'll also have all the links to our social media channels there, as well as how you can reach us. Now, I just want to mention too that the next two episodes, Todd, I think you're traveling. You're taking a vacation somewhere.
I have not taken a vacation for like 3 years.
Are you going in a submarine? Are you going down to the bottom of the ocean in a dangerous sub? Is that what you're doing? I hope not.
Too soon.
But you're going to be missing for two episodes, is my point.
Yes, sadly, I'm going to be missing for two episodes, but I will be back. Like a good rash, okay. I promise you, Mike.
Okay, you're going to be back. And also, by the way, that Friday, I think I'm nailing an interview with a crypto project lead who lives over, I don't know if it's Asia or the Middle East. I think it's Asia. But I have to do that interview at like 10 p.m. at night. So
is that Ruben with Firo?
I have to check the schedule. It might be Firo. Okay. But okay, it's a 10 p.m. deal, so I'm not even going to be in the studio at that time because my crew doesn't work. at 10 p.m. Okay. So that I'll be doing that from my home studio. It won't look as flashy with all the studio stuff here. But nevertheless, we have some fascinating episodes coming up, and you'll be back, Todd, from your round the world trip. Are you taking a balloon or what? What are you doing?
I'm going down to Costa Rica. I have a buddy who just retired. He bought a home down there, and we're going to go deep sea fishing.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm super excited.
You are going in the ocean. I almost guessed that one.
Yeah, you did. You did. But not in a, you know, five-seater.
Not in a dangerous, kind of sketchy submarine.
Yeah.
Made with kind of sketchy carbon fiber.
No, sir.
You don't want to go down to 13,000 feet? I hear it's nice and dark and cold down there.
It is. And you know what they're requesting on the radio?
What?
Air supply.
Sorry. Oh God, man. That's totally uncalled for.
Bad humor. Can edit that out.
No, we're gonna keep it. You're done now. You get to deal with the feedback on that one.
Now, I'll deal with it over the next 2 weeks, everyone. Just, you know, go ahead and send it to my hate mail. That's fine.
Okay. Well, how about this? Even if your submarine goes down, as long as you still have bandwidth, you could receive crypto as you're sinking.
Yes.
It's possible.
I can.
It's I mean, you may not have air, but if you have bandwidth, you could still die wealthy. Take the coins with you.
Yeah, I might have difficulty remembering my seed words down there, but that's okay. They're etched. They're etched in places.
Oh man, no. Oh, we wish you well, and you're gonna have a blast. And I know you'll have a lot of fun. But you're not doing scuba diving, huh?
No scuba diving.
No scuba.
No, okay. Just good old fashioned deep sea fishing.
All right. Well, good for you. That sounds like fun. In the meantime, just want to remind folks that the upcoming episodes, we're going to be interviewing founders and experts on a number of different projects that are all about decentralized living. And our guest today is kind of an unusual guest, being that he's running for the Senate. That's the only guest we have scheduled that is actually a candidate for political office. For the most part, this show is apolitical. But whenever a potential senator loves cryptocurrency, we would invite them on.
Yes.
And, you know, I've interviewed RFK Jr. before, and possibly I'll reach out to his crew and see if he wants to come on the show and talk about cryptocurrency as well. That would be fascinating. And any other candidates that will support this, I think Trump supports cryptocurrency. I haven't asked his press secretary yet, but I can do that later. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Todd, final thoughts about wrapping up today's show. Yeah, we're doing good on time, but we got a couple of minutes. So what do you want to say?
So impressed. I do want to invite everyone, if you want to be able to find me, I really like Telegram, and you can visit me at t.me/epicprivatemoney. Epic Private Money. Great community there where we talk about not just epic, but epic private money, which is an open invitation to, if you are a project, Monero, Thero, Grand Bean, we want you in that community to come talk and educate the community to be able to talk about how we can change our lives by stop using the network's money, as I said, and let's start transacting value for value with private cryptocurrency. So, but Mike, what a pleasure that has been. We have two down, Mike, and I think they've gone great. I can't wait to get back. I know you are going to do amazing things with the next two interviews. I can't wait to watch them myself, but I thank you again for asking me to be your co-host, and I just can't wait to see where this program goes. Give us a year, and I think we're gonna maybe change the world.
Yeah, we're gonna miss you on the next couple of episodes, but you will be back, assuming the swordfish don't drag you under or something.
Right.
In the meantime, you mentioned your channel. Let me plug something on our platform, Brighteon.com. So if you go to Brighteon.com, we now support cryptocurrency tipping across the entire platform.
Right.
I mentioned this on the last show, but it's worth repeating. So if you go to any of my videos, because I've entered my currently Monero wallet receive address in the dashboard, you'll see there's a button here that says tip crypto. If you click that, currently it displays a Monero QR code and address. This is going to be expanded to other coins, including, by the way, once Epic is fully integrated with Change Now, then Epic will be on here. You'll be able to tip with Epic. You'll be able to tip with other coins, privacy coins. And so as we meet more people and have more interesting projects, we will incorporate those coins into the system. So if you, as a content creator, you want to start receiving tips in cryptocurrency, you can do that on Brighteon.com right now. Just tell users in your video, hey, if you like this video, send us some crypto love, and the mechanism is right there. And you keep 100%, by the way. We don't even take, not even a fraction of a percent.
That's amazing.
And that's because don't even know about the transaction.
Quick question.
Yeah.
What if everything hits the fan and we don't have electricity and our cell phones don't work? Yeah. I mean, do we have a sponsor for this show?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I almost forgot to mention the sponsor is a satellite phone store, SAT123.com. And even though they're not peer-to-peer, obviously, they are off-grid. In other words, their phones and their two-way satellite text messaging devices, such as this Bivy stick right here, these devices work when the cell towers are down. And even when your local power grid is down, this is a backup means of communication that is a lot less centralized. For example, your geolocation is not easily obtained when you're using your satellite communications devices. Although you can turn on, with the Bivy stick, you can turn on your GPS location for your buddies to know where you are. You know, we have a lot of friends in law enforcement and special ops that use them on purpose for that. Mm-hmm. So that they know, like, hey, if I vanish, come find me, and here's where I am, you know, that kind of thing. Because they're running interesting missions here and there.
Right.
But Satellite Phone Store is the place to get this. Again, SAT123.com. We thank them for their support for this show. And again, the website is decentralized.tv. So that's a wrap, Todd. What a great show. And we had a great guest. We had a lot of fun. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah. Yeah. You're welcome. This has just been so fun. Thank you for the last two episodes, and I can't wait for the next ones.
Many more yet to come. This is just the very beginning.
Yes.
And we'll even have probably upgraded graphics and everything for the next show. So we're working on it. But thank you, folks, for watching and for sharing this show. Again, check us out at decentralized.tv. That's the website. Feel free to share this episode, and you can comment on it in our comment system at Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon and a strong believer in decentralized living, or as I say, building the infrastructure for human freedom. That's what we're doing here at Brighteon and with this show. Thank you, Todd. It's been a lot of fun. Take care.
You are welcome.
All right. Thank you for watching, everybody. Be safe. Take care.